Guess what, Brent?
What?
Today we have a special guest, Zach Cregger from The Whitest Kids You Know. He also made this movie called Barbarian.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen it.
I saw it.
So let's get... You know what? Today we're going to do something different. We're going to get right into it. But first, LVJCo.com. LVJCo.com. That's the website where you can get Louisville Vegan Jerky. And I'm seeing here that they just won the 2022 Veggie Award from Veg News for the best vegan jerky. That's right. It is a plant-based jerky. And Poundcast listeners, are you going to get 20% off? And all you got to do is use the code word Poundcast. Is that right, Brent?
I heard that was true.
Yeah. And look, there's exciting stuff happening over at LVJCo.com. They got some small batch flavors that they drop. There's one coming out called Cowboy Steak.
I got to have that one.
We got to get Cowboy Steak when that
drops. I got to get that.
Honey Barbecue.
Got to get that one.
General So's, that's coming out soon too. But look. Oh, look. Oh, no. General So's is sold out right now. New flavor. Cowboy Steak, it's there right now. You can add it to cart. You can get 20% off by using the code word Poundcast at lvjco.com.
This stuff is bagged in the United States, I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And also I heard that it has a shelf life of 9 months, I heard.
That's what I hear, and I think that is correct, sir. This is purely plant-based, non-GMO. The list goes on. But, you know, it's delicious stuff. You can also get it at the store at Sprouts or Whole Foods and such places as this.
Such places as that.
You can even find us, click the Find Us button at lvjco.com. lvjco.com, use the code word Poundcast. That's the bottom line.
20% off, you can't win. You know what I mean by that.
You can't win
anywhere else.
You can't
win
with by not doing that. That's what I think you meant.
You can't win. That's what I mean. You can't. That's what I meant. You're right. You can't win without doing that, you know?
Yeah, so that's who's bringing us our show today. Who else is bringing us this show? Patreon.com/Poundcast. Listeners like you, viewers like you, are what is making this show pop off. And if you support our Poundcast Patreon page, patreon.com/Poundcast, you're going to get Poundcast Unzipped.
We talk about Garbage Pail Kids today in the Unzipped. We talk about...
Unzipped is an exclusive section of the Poundcast that you can only get on patreon.com/Poundcast.
So you got to check that out, please.
Check it out. We talked to Zach Cregger another 30 minutes at least. We're talking Pale Kids. We're talking... We just kept talking movies.
Movies.
This was a fun episode. We're going to get into the... Should we just get into
well,
it?
Well, real quick. We got this YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
YouTube.com/ThePoundcast. There's an Instagram and Twitter account that's also ThePoundcast. And we also now have a TikTok account, which is ThePoundcast as well. And you can check that out for some clips.
We're all up on this TikTok and social media.
For the younger viewers.
Yeah.
And... One last thing is that we have a remix of our theme song.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is coming to us from Kyle Kiefman, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It could be Kiefman, but it could be Kiefman.
Yeah. I always think, when I see EI, I think that's an I sound. When I see IE, I think it's an E sound, you know, as in Weinbach.
Aha. Wine, EI.
Yeah, that's what EI. That's
so
what I
think.
Let's
go Kyle Kiefman.
Kyle Kiefman.
This
is what
Doug
I'm
and Brent,
say.
They're friends.
Doug and Brent, they're friends. They're friends. Yeah, they're friends.
Thank you, Kyle.
And
let's roll
this. This is kind of a wild remix, too.
Is this the one I just sent you with the.
Yeah.
Oh, he samples their baseball versus skateboarding.
It's funny because I would say this is.
I love
more
this.
Of almost an audio collage.
I love this one.
And it is. I feel like there's more elements from that video than the elements
this
from the
original.
This is just
a, this could be a completely unique piece, not even a remix at all.
Something like that.
Something like that. Let's roll the clip, and then we'll get into the show with Zach
Kreger.
He's going to be right out here.
I mean, come on. You probably saw Barbarian, right?
You've seen Barbarian.
You
go watch it.
You saw Barbarian, and you're going to learn some interesting insights.
There might be a couple spoilers, but...
Yeah, there'll be some spoilers.
Not going to be too hardcore.
Not to be too hardcore.
Let's roll the clip.
Bigger Bird!
Our ideas,
They're friends. They're friends. Doug and Brent.
What time do you go to sleep?
And we are live in the studio with director, comedian, Jack of many trades, Zach Kreger.
Oh,
director of
yes,
the smash hit Barbarian.
That's true.
It's a fun
among many things, but that's
that,
the,
yeah, that's the,
that's the,
that's the main one.
That's the main thing one. Right now, I guess. Yeah. Where do we start?
Dude, well, where do we start? There was a lot of people saying, "Did you see Barbarian?" Loved Barbarian. And then I watched it, and I loved it. It was
so good. Thank you.
It was fun. Thanks,
can I say, we were kind of talking about this. We said, well, let's save it for the podcast.
Okay.
That I've known Zach for a long time.
Long time.
And, but I guess I haven't seen you in a while because I didn't even know you were making this movie. And I heard about it because I just randomly watched this Justin Long appearance on a talk show, and he mentioned your name. He said, oh, well, the director, he's actually a comedian. He said something about Zach. He said, Zach Kreger, the director. I said, what? Zach Kreger? and then I looked, and I had heard about the movie Barbarian, and I thought, wait, what? Zach made this movie?
Yeah.
And it's just weird that I found out that way.
Yeah, that's a weird way to find out.
Because I know you. I know you.
Well, like, we know each other relatively well.
Yeah, certainly well enough that
not
I should have known.
Not even like in a showbiz, like, oh, I know that guy. Like, yeah, I know you.
We
like,
hang out.
We hang out one-on-one.
We hang out.
One-on-one?
Yeah.
What'd you guys do one-on-one?
We've seen movies.
We saw Spring Breakers together.
Did we see Spring Breakers together?
I think so, yeah. And then we saw, we go to dinner, and then we watched movies at your house, you know?
Yeah.
Or
we've
whatever.
Had long phone conversations.
Conversations. I mean.
But what, you know, it's not like, it was during COVID.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I was seeing anybody when this whole thing started up. And I, you know, it's like, it didn't feel right to, you're not on social media either, are you?
I mean,
right?
It wouldn't matter.
I wasn't like plastering it. Like I'm, you know, my ship's come in. I'm going to make a movie.
Yeah,
right?
That doesn't.
That's not a thing you post.
Uh-huh. But anyway, it's cool.
I posted the shit out of it when it came out,
right,
and
once
I was
it's
promoting
out. Right.
it. But like, you know, what if it sucks? I'm not gonna like, you know, hype it up until it's done. So yeah.
Well, it was a cool thing to find out. I just thought, wow, that's awesome
fun.
That you have this, you know, hit, you know, this hit movie. Thanks. And it's Zach Kreger of all people.
Yeah.
Can I start it with a question? I have a question.
Off,
is just, this is a kind of a general question, but are you, has the response from the movie and the way people have been experiencing it, has anything, is it exactly as you intended and expected, or have you been surprised by the response?
The whole thing's been a surprise.
Okay, how did you expect people to react, and what has been surprising?
Okay, so this was like a very weird movie from the beginning, and I thought I was never gonna get it made, even as I was writing it, because it's weird. You know, it's not a traditional three-act structure, and we follow a rapist for, you know, an entire act, and it's just like, you know, there's a lot of barriers of entry to this movie. So I didn't think anyone was gonna like take a flyer on it, but I really felt strongly about it. I was actually considering, like, you know, it took me 2 years of knocking on every door in Hollywood that I knew. Literally, I like went on Wikipedia. I made a spreadsheet of every production company that had ever made a horror movie in 15 years. And I sent it to every one of those companies that was in existence. And every single one said no. And so I was just kind of like, I was pretty convinced that no one was going to help me. And I thought for a beat, like, maybe I sell my house and go into credit card debt. And, like, really, maybe I could scrape up, like, $1 million somehow and, like, get every favor I've ever been able to call in. And that probably wouldn't have been a very good version of the movie. But, I mean, that's kind of where my head was at. And then Trevor Moore, my late writing partner, had a meeting with these young dudes, these 20-some-year-old guys from Long Island, and they were Whitest Kids fans. And so he'd had a meeting with them to try and sell them on this Whitest Kids movie that we have coming out. And he called me. He's like, yeah, they're not into it. Like, they like Whitest Kids, but they only do horror. And I was like, oh, I got to meet these guys. And for some reason, they weren't on my spreadsheet. So it shows what my research abilities kind of suck. But I sent it to them.
You're from Long Island. You don't want to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Long Island.
Exactly.
You're not,
I was like, I can't go
Long
this
Island?
Way. I'd rather sell my house. Thank you very much. Yeah, and they got it, though. They were, like, immediately down. And then they got it to Roy Lee, who has this company, Vertigo, Vertigo had already passed. I did send it to them, and they passed outright, but they got it to the top guy, and then he decided to help. And so then, this is a long story. I'm sorry, guys.
No, but, we love this
okay.
stuff.
But then, so we, through Roy, we were able to raise like $3.5 million through this French company, Logical, and they have like this pre-existing relationship with this production company in Bulgaria, and they were like, for $3.5 million, you can make this movie in Bulgaria. They're like, anything's possible in Bulgaria. And I was like, I'll shoot it on the moon. I'll shoot it at the bottom of the ocean. Like, whatever you think, let's go.
You shot it in Bulgaria?
Crazy. Shot it in Bulgaria.
Oh, that's my crazy. God. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. But it gets crazier. So then on the eve of my going away, I roped Bill Skarsgård in because Roy made it, and so Roy had a relationship with Bill. And so Bill agreed. He had a really small window that fit perfectly with our Bulgaria dates. I had Bill. I had Georgina, who's the lead. I didn't have Justin yet, but we were like ready to go. We had our start date. You know, I had already hired my department heads. We were designing the neighborhood. We built that whole neighborhood.
I was going to ask about that. That's wild.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then literally on the day of my going away party, my financier died. And so let me just say this. At this time, to answer your question really, my expectations of the movie were like, I hope that I get to make a movie that is cohesive from beginning to end and is like watchable. And I hope that Dream of Dreams it'll end up on Shudder or Hulu, God bless, or any streaming service, you know, God bless, you know, anywhere. Like, like, you know, I hope you can rent
just
it
so
on Amazon.
So somebody can see it.
Just so that the Dream of Dreams was that
so
it's
anyone
a
could
calling
see it.
Card yeah. that anyone could see mm-hmm. that would be, you know, a good proof of concept that I can direct a movie, and hopefully I'll get to make another movie. You know, that was kind of the beginning and end of my dream for this thing. And then, yeah, so anyway, that dream was dashed on the day of my going away party because my financier died and they canceled the movie. And my Bulgarian line producer was like, I can't, you know, it's been COVID. I can't hold on to everybody. Everybody needs to work. So I you know, he let the whole crew go. And then I was going to lose Bill, you know, because, and without Bill, like, you know, I how am I going to get more money? It felt like the end. And that was a Friday. And then on Saturday, Roy called, Michael Schaefer, who's the head of New Regency, and Saturday morning, he's like, I need you to read this script today. I need you to get on a Zoom with the director this afternoon. I need an answer today. And I got on a Zoom with Michael that afternoon, and he was just like, what's your budget? I was like, 3.5. And he's like, say 4.5. I was like, and he was like, I like that you already have it. I like that you have Bill, and you have a start date, and I don't have to do anything. This is fun. They'd never
so it's
made
plug
a
and
movie.
Play for him.
Yeah, their cheapest movie they'd ever made was like more than double the budget of this movie. So he was just like, yeah, go ahead. And then I called my Bulgarian line producer and he's like fired everybody. And then I was like, it was like a 24 hours of just like, I had a movie, I lost the movie. I got it back and then I lost it again. You know, it was like.
So what happened after that? Did he get the crew back?
Yeah,
and
then
stuff?
He scrambled. I mean, he really like did a full court press and he wrangled everybody back and.
This is really interesting, but I was also just curious about audience response, though.
I thought it might catch on because I've never seen a horror movie like it, and I felt pretty sure that like the big twists and the things that scared all the financiers away and all the producers away, I thought would be something that audiences would really like. So I go ahead. Oh, are you asking a question?
No, I just have a comment.
Yeah.
I think that we'll spoil it a little bit. You know, it's not a big spoiler, but like the concept. Everyone should just see it. But the concept of that, an Airbnb horror movie.
Sure, it's been done.
Has it?
Well, The Rental came out.
I guess I haven't seen one before. I was like,
he was gonna say that was an original idea.
No, I thought like that's a hook I've never seen before. Is like people going to an Airbnb, and then that's where the horror movie takes place. Like I thought that was like,
oh cool.
That's something everyone is like can kind of relate to.
I've
never seen before.
Oh good, great.
The Rental ain't shit compared to this. I haven't even seen it.
It's not bad. It's good.
If you could maybe just bring the mic, you can bring it to you,
like,
maybe,
like
or whatever.
That?
Yeah. I think that might be better. Okay. Right, Aaron? Is that? Okay. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay. No, The Rental's good. The Rental's really
good.
But
have you, have people surprised you in the way they've reacted to it and thinking, you know, did you expect it to be as funny as, or did you expect people to think it was as funny as parts of it were, and or what, you know, or did you think, did you expect it to be very as creepy as you expected it to be, or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I tried really hard to make it as creepy as possible. Yeah. So, like, I was aiming for that.
Yeah,
you know, I thought it would be pretty spooky. Yeah. I think I was a little surprised at how funny people thought it was.
Okay.
A lot of the reviews are like really lean into like, you won't believe that this movie's actually very funny, and I was like, okay, cool. I didn't expect
that
to be a part of the
conversation. You didn't intend for that to be as
I wanted it to be funny. Like when Justin's measuring things,
yeah, exactly.
I'm definitely like, this is hysterical
right.
to me.
Exactly, yeah.
But I didn't know if people would let it be funny to them. You know what
uh-huh,
I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like The Master, right? I think The Master is like a fucking comedy. But I don't think many people think of it that way, you uh-huh. know? So
yeah, that's how I felt about Precious, by the way. But
yeah, anyway, Precious is fucking hilarious. So I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I think it's funny. I don't really care if other people do. It doesn't like damage the intention of the scene. But I was on the first test screening, like people were like going fucking crazy, laughing their asses off at that. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm happy with that.
Without trying to spoil this too hard, but there is a moment where, you know, this one character says, look, I've been out here for this much, you know, 15 years, and I've never, they've never been over here, blah, 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 something like that.
Yeah.
Right when he says that, something happens.
Yeah.
And that was clearly a comedic moment, right? To some degree, right?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, kind of. Like, a lot of it to me is like, I don't categorize it as one or the other. I definitely see the humor there.
Yeah.
I had hoped, honestly, I had hoped that scene would be like a real scare.
Well, it is a scare,
but it's
and
not.
It's, and
like,
it's kind of it's humorous that he just said that he'd never had
obviously
any
there's
trouble,
an irony.
And then, boom, there's
yeah.
trouble, you know. Yeah.
But I think I was a little surprised that I'd say everybody saw it coming. You know, I think like most people who watch the movies like and cue deep blue sea moment. You know, like I don't think anyone was really like startled that she burst through the wall. Maybe they I don't know. But I don't think that necessarily like dampens the enjoyment of that moment. I think people are like, oh man, I think that's kind of the reaction we get.
Actually, were people,
like,
when you were shooting, were you guys laughing in between takes on stuff?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, big time. And you know, it's ridiculous. It's like a guy with like fake tits glued to him, like, you know, nursing a Justin Long.
Well, I didn't want to spoil it, but since you mentioned it, were you guys laughing at that between takes?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not laughing because that would be inappropriate of me, so I'm definitely trying to make sure that everyone is comfortable,
uh-huh.
but I'm certainly happy when they're laughing. You know what
they
I mean?
They were laughing.
Right. Oh, yeah, they're laughing their asses off.
They do
off,
the
and
best
that's
feeding.
Great.
They
it
do
wouldn't
the best
be appropriate of me to be like, you fucking guys look ridiculous.
Well,
no,
or no, maybe you were
like,
holding it in, just like, okay, guys, that was really good.
I mean, that room that we were filming that in was genuinely horrible. It was like super hot in there. It was really nasty. You know, it's like smaller than half of this room, and there's like 8 adults in it because, you know, people are holding all this.
And was it during COVID?
It was during COVID. So,
but in Bulgaria, they like, dude, just do whatever you want.
No, they dude, no way. They were like crazy
really?
About COVID, yeah.
Have you done horror before?
Not truly. Like, my first job out of college, I was an editor at this TV network called Imagination TV.
Imagination.
It was an American TV network for Asian Americans.
Okay.
And I was... It was very scrappy. You know, there was probably like 50 people total that worked at this network. It only existed for like 2 years, and then it like, you know, went under. It was kind of like UHF, you know. It was kind of like just a total.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was just like very DIY.
Did you just like make, can I do a show?
Yes, and like, really? Like Trevor worked there
that's
with
like
me,
my
and
dream.
So me and Trevor would like kind of fool them into letting us do like we'd like to do a Thanksgiving special, and they'd be like, okay, and then we like turn in like an absurd, ridiculous Thanksgiving special
for Asian Americans.
Yes, that made by two
really?
White guys, and they like had like they had to put it on the air because they just didn't have enough programming.
Is that why you were called the whitest kids you know? Because that's
no, we were called the whitest kids you know.
Sorry to jump around.
That's
here,
all right.
That would be funny if it was like from their perspective, the Imagine Asian people never.
Anyway. No, we were already called. We already existed
right.
before.
Right.
We
okay.
There. We were called the whitest kids you know because originally there was a black dude in the group, and before we had a name. Two of the guys, like, we had our first show coming up. We didn't have a name. And Trevor and Sam were, like, freestyle rapping to each other, just, like, goofing around at one of our, like, rehearsals or whatever. And the black dude was like, you guys are the whitest kids I know. And Trevor, I think, was like, that's the name! And then it was that was it. And we always thought we would change it. I've always hated the name. I think all of us have always hated the name. But at the time... You know, we put it on the first show, and the first show went well. And then we were like, well, we can't change the name. Then,
right.
And then not, we just like, we could have changed it at any point. But we always thought, like, we'll lose everything if we change the name.
Right.
So now we have this terrible name.
Okay, so back up a little
bit. I like that name, by the way, with there being a black person in the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That really kind of works. You know,
yeah.
It's not just, anyway.
Yeah.
I did ask. So you were at Imagination, and you did... What was the you said?
And so
you,
the horror
you
that
dipped
I did
into horror a little bit.
There was like some show I was like editing, and we got to do like little interstitials that we could film, and I remember I really like cajoled my way into producing little mini horror like 5 minute things to run in between episodes of this like Korean horror show that we had. I don't know how this worked, but so I got to shoot like in my apartment with my girlfriend at the time and like a couple of buddies or like you know. Like four or five little horror interstitials. They weren't good, but I really loved it. And you know, I just took kind of like the same comedy attitude of like DIY and just we're just going to shoot it and hope it's good and put it out there. So that was like my first and only dabbling in horror.
Yeah, it's interesting how comedy and horror kind of like they're like peanut butter and jelly.
I agree.
You know, it's like the crossover between comedy people doing horror. Seems like that's a thing that's like makes sense or something.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're really close with Tim Heidecker. I think that like the Bedtime Stories is like phenomenal and there's like strong horror stuff in there. Does he talk about this? Is he a big horror guy?
Not really.
But Eric,
I don't think so. I think they just like making fun of horror or something, or they like that mood, I guess.
But Eric Wareheim, you know, he directed this music video for that group or whatever.
Health?
Is it Health or no, Tobacco?
Oh, he's done several videos.
Well, it's scary. It's a scary music video. It's a massage parlor kind of themed video.
Oh, yeah.
It's really scary.
I think they like to dabble in the grotesque. So
yeah,
like,
for sure. I mean, they're always kind of on the line of horror, I feel
like. Yeah. So when you made this film, were you like studying techniques of like how to make, you know, there's like certain things that you do in a horror film, like editing tricks and, you know what I'm saying? Like framing things and... How did you line all that up?
I mean, I think my whole life I've been studying it. You know, I always watch movies
just
like,
from watching it.
Yeah, I watch movies like very attentively, and movies I love, I'll watch like, you know, many times, and I always just like to sponge up like, why is that so cool? You know?
Did you have it like storyboarded?
Yeah.
Or
so
like yeah,
definitely.
How did you go about like
so
how detailed did you prep?
Very.
That's the question is like prepping for it. Like what
yeah.
You,
so like the 2 years that it took me to get a producer on board, I really did watch the movie every night in my head as I fell asleep. I was obsessed.
You're probably having nightmares every night.
And so I really didn't do anything for a long time, but like think about this movie. And,
okay.
And honestly, this is embarrassing, but like it's true. But like when I got the money and I knew I was going to go shoot it, I would like in my garage where I wrote the movie, I acted out directing the movie, like, by myself.
No.
Like, yeah, I did. Like, I would just think of every scene, and I would be on my feet, and I'd be like, okay, like, you're here, and I would, like, plot it out.
And you'd say it out loud.
I would say it out loud, and I would, like, talk to, like, invisible people, and I would just, like, we're going to move down. It just, and it helped me. It honestly helped me a lot. It's embarrassing, but, like, I don't care.
So you rehearsed directing.
I did.
And how many times did you
rehearse? I mean, not a bunch, like, once, twice.
That is
but
so
like,
interesting.
But I,
a rehearsal for the director.
I physically imagined directing the whole movie.
Did you ever get stuffed animals to make
a little... Or like a broomstick?
But then I did
like...
go through and I made full shot list. And then when I got to Bulgaria, I worked with my DP, and we would go to every location weeks in advance, and we would photo board every shot of the movie. There's this app. I think it's called Artemis. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Arturo. Whatever. And you pick the lens, you know, we'd bring like stand-ins, and we framed up at the location exactly every angle we would shoot. And that way we were able to go and like very freely just kind of have bad ideas, talk it through, you know, top each other's ideas and come up with really creative ways to shoot the whole movie with no pressure, no producer being like, we got to move.
And you probably didn't have to shoot superfluous stuff you weren't going to use. Getting coverage with things that you weren't going to ever use. You already had what you knew what you needed.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we showed up on set and we had a big like poster board and we had stills with every lens, every angle on the board. So that's everything we're going to shoot that day is like this many shots and this is the order we're going to go. So if anyone didn't know what was next, they could just look at the board.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then we would like cross them out as we went. So it was very clear. And now you have to be ready to throw all that out if an actor like has an idea, wants to change something. And that's fine. That's good. You know, I always want everyone's ideas to like top my idea. You know, that's how we did it.
That if you had something really related, I have something kind of more some specific questions about the movie.
More production questions.
Go ahead.
The Bulgaria thing.
Yeah.
And you say you built that neighborhood?
Well, our hero block. We built, right?
Okay, another spoiler, but it flashes back to the 80s.
Right.
And you see that same neighborhood,
right.
But it's like all pristine before it gets like run down. It's like modern day Detroit. It's all, you know, busted, but then back to the 80s. So those were straight up the same place?
Yeah.
Same
so
place?
That,
just
like,
dressed differently?
Mm-hmm. So for that flashback... We wouldn't have been able to do it if we hadn't been so prepared. Like, we had to know exactly what we would see in the flashback. So I knew the camera would be here. We would see these surfaces of these buildings. If you were to, like, pan the camera this way or this way, it would have looked ruined.
Right.
But, like, just what was in the frame, we like, recoded. So the first thing we shot was the ruined exteriors.
Okay.
And then we went and we moved onto a stage for all of our interiors. And that took three weeks. And while we were on a stage for our interiors, they were like refabbing. Refabbing? Is that? I don't know. Refurbishing?
Right.
redoing the neighborhood to look like the 80s. And so then at the very last thing we shot was the 80s flashback.
So,
we came back to our...
But that neighborhood...
That's actually the biggest CGI in the whole movie is the lawn in the flashback.
Oh, that's CGI.
Was, yeah. Under Kurt's feet. Kurt was like standing on like dead grass.
Kurt Braunholer.
Yeah. It was fun to see Kurt show up.
Yeah, it sucks because like I really called
and
Kurt.
And he came to Bulgaria?
Yeah, I called Kurt like in advance. I was like, listen,
for that
buddy.
One shot.
I was like, I need a favor, man. I need you to, you're not going to make any money.
Uh-huh.
But like, you know, this is a personal favor to me. Like, please come do this part. And he was like, yeah. And you know, he's got like two very young children, family, you know, he's busy.
No, he's like, I'm ready to get away from these kids.
But the scene that he came out was way longer. You know, it was like a much more substantial scene where he follows Richard Brake to the house and accuses him of like killing his dog, and it like gets like, it was a meatier scene, and he did a great job. Like Kurt crushed it; it was awesome. But it just was one of those things in the edit where it's just like, we get it. Richard Brake's a serial killer. Like we don't need to hammer this point home. Like we want to get back to present day, and so I cut that scene by like 2/3. And then I had to like call Kurt and be like, I'm so fucking sorry, dude.
She didn't get fully cut.
Happens, man. So what got cut from that was him following him and accusing him of killing his dog and anything else?
No, just that.
Uh-huh.
But it's longer. I mean, it's like, I cut his scene by like 60%, you know?
Yeah.
But those houses exist.
I think they're still there. I think they're
Wait,
still standing.
Wait, those were built?
No, we built them from scratch.
Those...
Like,
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah, they're all facades. I mean, now if you open the door of any of those houses, it's just nothing.
Like, where is that? Is that just like in?
It's in a field. So there's a field
somewhere, and then
with
the street,
a road, and there's a laboratory. Road.
Okay.
There's like this private laboratory that studies flowers, and so one side is just a field, and that's where our hero house was. And the other side is this one-story brick wall where this lab was, and so we built these like four really tight together houses against the wall of the laboratory. And if you look between the houses, you can see this brick wall. It's like, why is that there? And I tried to like do everything I could to like hide the brick wall. I put like dead fake trees
I
in there.
I have no idea.
Like, nobody ever noticed, but I thought on the day, I was like, the movie's ruined. Like you can see the wall. Like, what are we doing?
It looks perfect.
Yeah, nobody,
perfect.
Nobody
that's
knows.
So funny. I just wanted to ask you a couple specific things. One is, just to get clarity on this, and I don't know, maybe it's ambiguous on purpose, I don't know, but were there more people down there that we didn't see? You know what I mean? And here, the reason I asked that is this, and maybe I
would say that never crossed my mind.
Well, the reason I thought of it, and maybe I misheard things, but when Justin Long is being chased and he gets close to the dad's room or whatever, I heard, and maybe I heard something, I don't know what I heard, but I thought I heard a man kind of yelling that wasn't Justin Long.
You heard it, yes, you did.
And
you heard a...
Or something. Yeah. I heard somebody that sounded like a man yelling or being tortured or something like that, it sounded like to me.
Right.
And it didn't seem like it was the mother character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it didn't seem like it would have been the dad character in the room. So I thought, there's other people in this thing that we're not even seeing, you know?
Or Good ears.
Okay,
and
that made me think. So, okay, there's more to this that we don't even get to see. You know,
I'm usually a big fan of. Hey, I don't know. Maybe, but in that, I can tell you like that scream. Yes, is not the voice of
any characters we saw.
Yes,
is it a Wilhelm scream? You just dropped.
No, no, but it's. I don't know where we got that scream from, but I just really liked it. It was something we put in temp, and I just got kind of hooked on it. And I was just like, I don't want to lose that, so it just
stayed. Leave it.
I left it. Now the scream of the mother mostly is actually me. I brought in so many people to do screams. I got Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth to do screams. I got Henry Zebrowski from last podcast came in and did some screams. I had all these people. I could not get the right scream.
The one you're hearing in your head.
Yeah. I was watching this YouTube video of these cops.
Time's up.
Of these cops investigating a graveyard at night, and they hear this like banshee shriek. There's a dash cam footage, and they like turn and they sprint. And I was like, what is that sound? And I found out it's this thing called an Aztec death whistle. Have you guys heard of this? And I bought one on Amazon for like $19. It's like this little stone thing.
I need
and you
it.
Blow it, and it makes the most like ungodly, like cougar, like hellish woman, like shriek.
Aztec
sound.
Death
Whistle. It's called the Aztec Death Whistle. Anyone can get it. Get on Amazon. They're so loud. They're so terrifying. So now I like have it, and it's like for fun. I'll like blow it in random situations, and it will send anyone into like an instant panic. Like we went camping, and I just like stepped out of
the
tent.
I need
one
of
these now. It is so terrifying. It's great. Anyway, so in a couple of moments we put the Aztec death whistle in.
Okay, so because that the man's yell was in there or scream was in there, does that imply there were more people there, or are you saying no
he's
or
saying
what?
He's not gonna.
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't
I
know. Mean, okay,
I
can, just,
no, I don't know.
Okay. I would say if he's so he's one of these guys that has captives in his basement. We've heard these stories of these people, these psychos.
Right.
So he's like one of those guys. So he could be having more bait, and then
that's
the mother.
Why,
yeah, he's having more of those.
I assume
those
that
victims.
And you know what's
there.
Funny is a lot of people get hung up on like, well, the mother, she was born in like this time, so the mutation is only two generations. It's like, we don't know how long the mutation was. You know, honestly, it's like in the flashback in the 80s, like he's getting baby things. That could be for a baby that's already three generations mutated.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, there's no, who's to say when he's begun this horrible process, you know?
I assume that there's probably more people down there just because, well, why wouldn't there be? There's all kinds of.
I mean, who gave birth to the mother? Where's she?
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and that, and there must be other siblings and who else? And other cousins and things and whole families and stuff. Where do they go? So, you know, it could be a sequel there. There's a whole city of these people down there, you know, or something like that.
Wait, you said there's no sequel, though, right?
I mean, Well, look, here's all,
it's called Barbarians. I read a couple I've
said that.
Things, and you've said no sequel, but
I've said that, and my attitude is I don't want to. To me, the joy of Barbarian is not the subject matter; it's the way the story is told.
Yeah,
and what I don't want to do is make another movie about like dungeon rape people. You know?
Well, no, like, I love how it cuts to California.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, like, Justin Long is in a convertible. It's like, what are we watching?
That's right. My second question. Yeah. Specific question.
And you shot that in Bulgaria.
No, that's Malibu. Just,
that'd be funny if somehow you like make it look like
that. Bulgaria is on the Black Sea.
I was actually wondering that. Did that you shoot the California scenes there? But what was that song that he was singing in the beginning?
Ricky Tikki Tavi. It's a Donovan song.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. And why did you think of that for that? And everything?
I originally tried to get another song by a contemporary musician, and it was in the script, this other song, and I like made an offer to this guy that I thought was really generous, and he just gave me a very rude response.
Really?
While we were on set, and I was like, fuck you, dude. So I was like, So I was just like, I'm not going down this road anymore. And then
you'll tell us after.
I'll tell you after. And then I was listening to music, you know, in Bulgaria, and that song that came on my thing, and there's something about the cowbell. I was like, this is the dumbest. This sounds so stupid. And I loved it. It was just like so happy and so vapid. And then I was like, this has got to be it. Like, this is perfect. And like the lyrics are so like kind of nimble. You know, they're very, it's not an easy song to lip sync.
Verbose.
It's very busy and intricate. And I was just like, I would like to see Justin like nail this. I think that would just like, he's heard this 1,000 times. Like, that's such a weird song to know.
So
to have him kind of doing the like, you know, it's just was fun to me. So.
And then the final song.
Well, that song, I think it's funny to me that not a lot of people pick up on, but like, so Ronnie Spector, you know, lived this movie.
When he goes, lollipop, lollipop, right?
Lollipop. No, that's Smile, dude.
What am I thinking
of? Be My Baby.
Right. Yeah, okay, yeah. I got that mixed up.
There's a lot of layered meaning to that, Be My Baby.
Of course. Because the meaning to me that is like the most fun is that Ronnie Spector was imprisoned in her house by her husband for like a decade.
Yeah.
And escaped barefoot into the night, you know? And it's like, that she like
I didn't know it was that hardcore.
So it's not just about Be My Baby. It's about like this, and that's what Jane Eyre is, you know? So like all these things are, you know, it's like, this happens.
Right. Yeah. Go on.
No, I'm done.
No, I had
done with that.
And we're done.
I had a question, and I'm trying to remember what it was now. This was my question. Did you at one point think you would play a significant role in the movie?
No,
never. You never.
Never.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not even a Hitchcock little. Like,
well, I'm in it.
Well,
I have a cameo. I'm in it twice. I'm the guy that Justin is talking to in the bar in Detroit when he's like,
oh, of course, right.
It's my shoulder.
And right. I told Zach this, you know, already on email, but I just that he also. Can I say that? Who else you play in the movie?
Sure.
He plays the agent, Justin Long's agent, who you only hear the voice of on the phone. But I immediately knew that it was Zach. Just, you know, it sounded like him, you know.
Well, you know what's funny is my own mom watched the movie and then got on the phone with me and was like, so I saw your name in the credits, but who are you? I didn't see you. I'm like, I'm the guy in the bar.
Don't you know your son's voice?
I'm like, I'm the guy in the bar. She's like, oh, interesting.
And the voice, too.
And then she watched it again and called me. She's like, wait, are you on the phone? I was like, Mom, yes. It's funny how, like, my friends, like, yeah.
So the basement stuff, was that a place you found? Or did you
dig that out?
Like, or was that?
It's like, on a soundstage. So we just built, like, this tunnel. So, like, the first level, like, the living room and all the bedrooms and the bathroom, that's on a soundstage. We built that. And then, so it was all kind of existing simultaneously. So that was like in the middle of this giant, massive studio. And then along one side is like the long tunnel. And then it turns left. And then it goes kind of along the edges of the studio. And then we had the basement set over here. And then we had that little fake hallway.
But there's, so like,
there's
downward...
like all these, it's all like kind of in this big grid. You know what I mean? And then we had to build the really long staircase.
Yeah.
That's freestanding over here. And that was like a big fight. Like they were like, for safety, you can only have 20 meters tall. And we were like, we have to have 30. And that was like this really intense.
You're like, I'm sorry.
We don't do meters.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I was like, yes. I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean.
The fight was, we got to use
we don't do metric.
A different system here. Okay.
But I'm so glad we got it to 30 because the whole point of that shot is it looks like it goes down forever.
Right.
You know, and at 20 meters, there's no way you wouldn't be able to see the bottom. Yeah.
Were you ever scared yourself when you were
No.
What's it
That'd
like?
Be amazing. So I was like, I can't do it. I don't know what to tell you. I can't do it. I can't direct it.
What's it like in Bulgaria?
Bulgaria's crazy. It's great. It's like
Eastern European.
It's Eastern European. It's
like
borders.
Modern?
It borders Greece, right? So you have Greece, and then right above it is Bulgaria. In fact, what we think of as Greek food originated in Bulgaria.
Uh-huh.
Bulgaria is actually the oldest country in Europe. Plovdiv in Bulgaria is the oldest city in Europe. It's got a lot of history. It's been invaded by the Turks. It's been invaded by Russia, obviously. It's been, you know, had a really wild...
Romans probably got in there.
Sorry?
The Romans.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. It's like the Forrest Gump of like European nations. It's kind of been, it's had a hand in everything. And the architecture is like brutalist, communist, you know, architecture. So at first you're like, ooh, this is kind of a weird vibe here. But the people were great. There's a Eastern European cultural gap that at first I found a little off-putting, and then by the end I was like, I wish this is how it was in America. And the difference is basically they do not ever put on airs. Like, my first Zooms with my Bulgarian crew, they were like on the Zoom, like meeting me, the director, their potential boss, and this is the body language. Yes, we can do this. Yes, we can do this.
Right.
You know,
right,
and I'm just
right,
like,
right,
okay,
they're
you're
not like, hey, Hans,
yeah, they're
to
like,
see
hey,
you.
Nice to meet you. Great script. Cannot wait. This is going to be off. Like, they don't do that at all.
I love that.
Because they're like, I'm tired. Why would I?
Right.
What do you want me to lie?
Right.
Like, I remember, like, the day before, like, the weekend before we were going to start shooting, my DP, who's an American, he said to our, like, props master, he's like, Nasco, are you excited? Are you excited? And Nasco's like, no.
It's like, no, I do a job.
It's a job. Why would I be excited? And it's just like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's so great. Like, they think that Americans are just like ridiculous people, you know? Like,
right. Toxic positivity
fake.
Or
yeah,
something.
Phony,
yeah.
Like bubbly, like little Barbie people. And they're right. Like, we kind
right.
of are, you know? And,
they're
and
right.
It's cool because when they actually are friendly and when they actually say nice things, they
it's
really
real.
Mean it, you
that's
know?
That's awesome.
Whereas here, everyone's a fucking bullshit. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Pretty cool.
Are you thinking now that you're going to be doing more horror stuff or what?
I'm writing a movie right now. It's a horror. It's weirder than Barbarian. I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
You know, it's yeah, it's rough, but I think it could be really cool. I'm really excited about it.
You say weirder. Now is it darker?
It's pretty dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty dark.
So it's darker and weirder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who do you want to be in it?
I can't say.
You can't even say
who you want to be in it.
No, why would I? Because I can't. Why would I say that now?
Are you thinking you've got now?
Because what if I say a name and then they pass and then it's out there and then other actors are gonna be like, well, I know who you want and I don't want to be your third choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you think? Are you kind of thinking now because you have cachet from this you know Barbarian that you can get somebody real big for the movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you kind of in your mind have somebody kind of real big in mind.
I do.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I have a few big ones, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm going to ask you later.
But it's been cool. I've had a lot of really amazing people reach out.
Yeah, what's been the sort of industry response? And
it's
like,
been very positive.
Yeah, that's. I mean, this is giving you, opening a lot of doors, I guess, for movie making. Now,
yeah, to the basement.
yeah, straight down.
To a room with
a
bed and a
doors.
Camera. Yeah.
Down to more horror movies.
Yeah.
I want to know what did you do before the movie, you know what I'm saying? Like after Whitest Kids, like what happened in that section of?
So at the end of my Whitest Kid, or no, actually it was in the middle of shooting. So Whitest Kids was 5 seasons.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it was between 2 and 3 or 3 and 4. I don't remember, but I made a movie with Trevor called Miss March. And it was a Fox movie. It came out wide and it was a disaster. It was like 5% on Rotten Tomatoes, like total box office flop, panned.
Critically panned, but audience
5%
loved it.
Rotten Tomatoes.
But audience or critics?
Both.
Okay.
Universally loathed. And I hated it, too.
You hated it, too. So when you got the negative feedback on it,
I was like, I know.
Oh
it was miserable.
What
it
went
was
wrong?
So miserable.
What went wrong?
What went wrong was this. I didn't want to make it in the first place. It was we had a moment of heat from Whitest Kids. Uh-huh. Whitest Kids was cool, and I was brought this script
that so I, it's not that your somebody, vision. Somebody, it's not your script.
It wasn't my vision. It wasn't my script. And they were, I said no. And they were like, you can rewrite this. You can star in it and you can direct it. And I was like, well, I do want to be very famous. And so, you know, I was like, okay, let's try. Let's take the yes. And so Trevor and I rewrote it and starred in it and directed it. And it was, you know, the lesson I learned was, you know, you can polish a turd all you want, and at the end of the day, you have a shiny piece of shit, and that's what it was. And so it was.
Even though with the rewriting, it still wasn't to your liking.
You know, it's just like it's
you just didn't
DNA.
Like the basic.
It's like what am I? I didn't want to make a movie about like a sex road trip comedy. You know, that was it's not my thing. And
is your name on it as a writer?
Yeah, co-director, yeah, all of it. I think of Barbarian as my directorial debut because it's. Came from me. I did it by myself. You know, I'm the writer director. It's my first movie. Whereas, you know, Miss March is like, Trevor and I did it together. It came from this other thing, and it was just for the wrong reasons, and it wasn't like a Zach Kreger thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and you know, Trevor, you know, rest in peace, is not he has a different attitude towards that movie than I do. Like he was not as hard on it as I was. I think Trevor would say, like, I know what he would say. He would be like, you know, the movie didn't work, but there's some scenes in it I'm really proud of. And, you know, like, we got with Delta pretty crummy hand, and we made the best of it, and, you know, it is what it is.
Did that movie hurt you at all?
I think so. So that's kind of where I'm going. So I think that, like, in my mind, I was in director jail. You know, like, I thought everyone in Hollywood is talking about what a failure I am. Everybody's like, there goes the guy that made that terrible movie.
Oh, my God. No one's talking.
I know. And it took me a long time to get over myself and realize, like, I don't matter enough to be in director jail. Like, I'm not that important. That movie was only $5 million. It's not like people are, like, pissed, you know? And so it took me a long time to just be like, oh, I'm only in director jail because I put myself there. Like, no one cares enough to think of this. So... to answer your question, after Whitest Kids, I just started acting in sitcoms. So I did like a bunch of NBC multicams and things like that.
He was in that show, Wrecked. What was it called?
Wrecked TBS. It's a good show that I like a lot. But, you know, I was just making my living as an actor, which I'm totally proud of, and it was great for me. I don't mean like, oh, woe is me. I mean, it was awesome. How lucky am I? I got to like not have a day job. It's great. It's the best. I'm in the end zone. But, you know, I wanted to do this. When I was a little kid, I didn't want to be a comedic actor. I wanted to be a filmmaker. And so after a while, I just started writing scripts. And then, you know, I wrote a bunch of scripts, mostly bad. But then...
Why do you think that?
Just because I just know. You know, it's like, you're not going to, like, hit a grand slam your first time at bat. Like, you gotta kind of work the muscle. You gotta figure yourself out. I had to, like, find my voice, I guess. And then I was in Fiji. I was shooting a season of Wrecked in Fiji. I don't drink, and so everyone else on that show drank, and that's awesome for them. But like
you're drinking Fiji water.
I drank Fiji water. Yeah, you get it. So I at night, you know, I just didn't want to hang out and like party. So I just go back to my little bungalow thing, and I wrote this Batman script. Just in my evenings there, and I loved it. It was just like I was just so proud of it, and it was the first script I like sent out, and I was like, I know I'm never gonna get to make this movie, but I just as a calling card that like I can write, and it got a lot of like good feedback from that, and it gave me a lot of confidence to like, okay, maybe I can write another script.
So people are like, okay, I'm gonna look for that name.
People are like, this guy's good. Like my agent was like, for the first time, my agent was like, oh my god, like because I'd moved agency, so this guy had like never seen a feature I'd written or anything like that. He was like, oh, you actually you can do this. Like, okay, cool. It was very affirming for me. And then I wrote Barbarian next, and then yeah,
cool.
2 years later, yeah.
Were you in a sitcom with Justin Long or something like that? Or
no.
You didn't know? Did you know?
I'd hung out with him at the Aspen where we were.
That's where I met you. Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember meeting him there, but he remembered meeting me.
He was in the Apple Dumpling Gang or whatever.
Yes.
I saw that movie when we were in Aspen.
It's
actually,
funny because he remembered hanging out with me at Aspen. I don't remember that. And then I hung out with him like a few years ago, and I remember like we talked for like all night long, and I remembered that, and he didn't. So like we have like missed memories of each other, but. Whatever. But so when he came on to the thing, it wasn't like I didn't have his number in my phone. It wasn't like we were like buddies.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. I thought that you might have known him.
Yeah.
Like before, you know, or maybe that's how you had him be involved in the movie. But, But yeah, well, anyway, if people haven't seen it yet, check it out. Hopefully it wasn't ruined for you. I don't think so. It kind of stayed clear of any spoilers
I
think.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, probably not, actually. We got into the dungeon rape offspring thing. That's
no
kind
way.
Of a,
there's a lot. It's definitely.
There's other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to watch it.
One thing I thought was so cool, and this is a big spoiler, so go close your ears if you're. But I thought it was just really cool how, you know, halfway through the movie or so, just things completely change, you know, or that the focus changes.
Yeah.
I thought that was just so cool that
Just,
you have this.
It just cuts to California and you're like, okay, what? And then you have to figure out what's happening.
Yeah.
And then you do and you're like, oh.
Well, it's just interesting to see what seems like, I'm really going to spoil this, but there's these kind of seemingly main characters of this movie and then they're not the main characters anymore. I guess I didn't really fully ruin that, but.
That's all right.
It just seemed like. That I don't know. That was cool. Just to okay, we're invested in these people, and then boom, we're not. That's over now. For it seemed like at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It just seemed like oh, this is a new movie now, almost
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah,
I like that a lot.
Thanks.
Actually.
Yeah, I like that too. You know, it's funny, Brent. I thought about you in post a good amount because you have such strong opinions on score.
Yeah.
In movies, where I know you really are a minimalist.
The score is really cool.
A purist. Thank you. And I know there were legitimate moments where I was like putting the score in. And I was thinking of you, and I was
oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, I was like, Brent's
gonna. You're like, should I just take the score
I was like,
out?
Brent's gonna hate this.
I don't know,
because it is manipulative. But I feel like in a horror movie, you got to use every tool.
I mean, look, whatever you know, it works and stuff. What I really just don't like about score is, I just if it's used all the time throughout the whole movie, and it just you know, especially when it comes to romantic scenes and stuff, it just so. Just makes everything so melodramatic and corny, you know.
Well, if
it's
a bad score, but certainly we can agree there are times where a score elevates everything.
To me, when it just feels like
you had your druthers, would you have no scores on any films ever?
No, only during sort of emotionally neutral scenes or
scenes. It's so ridiculous.
What music goes in an emotionally neutral scene?
I don't know.
Scene?
Just
if someone's running errands, then you can score that. But if someone's having a moment,
montage sequences are good. Or you know, if there's like transitional scenes, if someone's driving to some place or something. But then when there's really serious stuff happening, and it's really obvious what we're meant to feel or whatever, a score to me just says. Just in case you don't know, you're supposed to feel romantic
agree.
Here or something.
I agree with
that. And that feels insulting to my intelligence, you know, not
I think
just
that you're,
in a cerebral way, but also.
I understand what you mean.
By the way, I'm not saying
take Barbarian.
It has nothing to do with Barbarian.
We've moved on from Barbarian.
And by the way, horror movies can do things in ways that can be really effective because things might not be as on the nose, depending on how the score is. But anyway,
but like
leave that out of it. Okay.
Okay, so let's by the way, I don't even know if I have a position. I might agree with you. I'm not really sure, but let's just for discussion talk about No Country for Old Men.
Okay, it's funny. I was going to bring up what's the movie with Al Pacino in the bank,
Dog Day Afternoon,
which has zero score.
And it is very effective. And
by the way,
go through the ringer with that movie.
Yeah, and No Country for Old Men,
two moments.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. That movie didn't have a score, but I actually would argue that there is kind of a score. Well,
it's two moments.
Yeah, I remember hearing it. It's interesting that even Carter Burwell's credited because there was hardly anything. But I would argue that the wind noises almost...
Oh, well, that's sound design.
Yeah, it is. But that almost seemed like a score to me to say it's really, you know...
Okay, what about David Lynch?
Yeah, well, it depends. Yeah, first, let me say this. Quentin Tarantino uses music really well in almost all his movies. I've never had a problem with the way he uses movies.
That's not really score.
It's not score, you're right. He's using...
Needle drops.
He uses song, yeah, but he uses it at the right moments where it's not overkill when there's not... But there's a lot of... I appreciate the silence.
I like how he uses counterpoint.
Yeah,
you know
counterpoint.
Where like someone's
wait,
getting
what
killed.
What do you mean?
It's like the guy's getting his ear cut off, and it's like stuck in.
Yeah,
the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
irony.
Like
yeah.
Happy music with the.
Yeah, counterpoint is great. It's I think if it plays to not what's obvious, you know, if there's a scene that's happy but you're hearing kind of weird or dark music, that's cool. Serves
that's
a purpose.
Mixing it up.
And Lynch does that a lot.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think. So Lynch will use music that. Is either counterpuntal or
counterpuntal is a great word,
or it is intentionally melodramatic. you know?
Yeah.
Like in the TV show, or Twin Peaks, that is, yeah. you know? Well, that it's like meant to be a soap opera.
Eraserhead, where the score is like overpowering in every scene and adding to the unease.
I would say that I feel I've never had an issue with what Lynch movies as far as score goes, because I feel like he's there's some kind of artistic purpose to yeah. it that is actually is elevating it, because it's bringing something to it that you wouldn't get otherwise, yeah. I feel like, from just the scene. But what in a lot of big Hollywood movies, you know, it's the score is just there to reinforce exactly what you already know. For me, at least what I know, and it just seems like an overkill to me, and it just yeah. ends up being very corny to me.
I enjoy
Lord of the Rings.
I agree with you a lot.
Lord of the Rings, I love
Lord,
that
of, the Rings,
like,
the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Lord,
I just have to throw that out. That was my. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, I know. No, I mean, hey, look, the Academy loves this loves the stuff, but I just
no, I agree with you a lot. I do like. I think horror movies. I like horror scores because you can get really like abstract and yeah. sort of like
exactly. That's what I meant.
It could be
yeah.
this like textural thing yeah. that like it makes it creepy. You know.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate a good horror score, but like needle drop stuff is what bugs me sometimes.
Oh,
where
really?
It's like, you know, who does it is a. What's his name? The director that does all the movies with Bill Murray and
Wes Anderson.
It's just sort of like this hipster score where it's like, look how cool I am. I'm gonna have a slow-mo shot with like this cool. I don't know, but sometimes that's like
I
bugs
love that
me.
Stuff. I mean, I
really?
Feel like, well, yeah, but I mean, I don't
a lot
have
of times
the,
he does it well, but sometimes I'm like.
Like Rushmore, I thought the score was such an amazing
part
of that movie.
It was
movie.
The one with the family that I remember seeing.
Royal Tenenbaums?
Yeah, I think there's some parts in there where I'm like, and we get it.
Like Nico is playing,
right.
like getting off the bus. And,
look, yeah, that scene specifically.
I loved it.
I mean, look,
got me.
It's all to me.
I'm into it.
To me, it's just, you know, a director needs to be used discretion, I think.
Use discretion.
You
know, when,
because it all can be effective, but it just needs to be used at the right time. Sometimes it's such an overkill. Lord of the Rings is my prime example because there's a soundtrack playing through that whole movie, and it's not part of the world. That's what's crazy about it to me, is that scores and needle drops or whatever are not happening in the movie, and it's just this mysterious element that is part of the movie, but it's not even in the world. And what? Where is this? That's
you know
just
what bugged
weird to me.
You know what bugged me is that new Elvis movie.
Which I haven't seen it.
Which I liked.
You did.
Yeah, it's fun. I kind of like. I couldn't help but like it.
Yeah.
You know, after a while, it's so over the top. Like,
yeah.
You know, his style is just like there's a cut every half a second. But you're just going with it.
That's another. No, that's my second big issue with movies in general.
But like
quick cuts.
Oh my god, dude, that's like, come on, like
well, it depends on the scene, but I just Lord of the Rings again is just non-stop. It's a 3-hour movie and I never had a single opportunity to absorb, you know, what the scene, you know, any scenes, you know, I never had an opportunity to just soak it in because everything was just cut. I hated that.
You
3 hours?
Must hate Paul Greengrass movies.
I don't know. I don't
like Bourne movies and stuff.
Oh, I've
like
never
that.
Seen any of those.
Have
but,
you seen Peter Greenaway's movies? Have you seen like The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and
yes,
the Lover?
Those
do you
are,
like those?
Yes, I do.
A lot
absolutely.
Of score.
Yeah. I you know, it never I maybe I don't I that didn't
heavy
register
score.
To me, but
yeah.
I or maybe I don't remember. I mean, I've only seen actually quite a few, but
yeah.
What I was going to say is sorry to we'll get the
I had a point.
Oh, sorry.
A long
sorry.
Time ago.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The Elvis movie there.
Well, Baz Luhrmann's like that, by the way. Go ahead.
They have like hip hop in there. Or like
that's
modern.
That's crazy, dude.
It's like, you know, it's a movie about the 60s to the 70s or whatever. 50s this. And there's scenes where he's like modern hip hop beats are coming in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell? That really took me out of it.
Well, that's, you know, like you
but his
Tarantino.
Style is he's so
Django
out there.
Was
Django.
That was my least favorite of his. Cuz
when like that hip hop song comes in when Django's like fucking everybody
that's
up.
That's my least favorite.
I get it. It's like at that and I totally like first of all Tarantino, obviously genius,
yeah.
you know.
No, he's one of the
huge
best.
Inspiration.
He's one of the best filmmakers.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. But that moment really did take me out, where I was like, "What are we doing?"
That's one of my least favorite of his movies, actually. And but I do think, generally speaking, Quinn uses music very well.
He does,
and he uses the needle drops well. And
he
stuff.
Does. It's amazing.
But Baz Luhrmann is a cut guy too.
But Brent, that's one of the that's the only Scorsese says. I think it's Scorsese. I could be wrong. But he says what makes film its own art is editing.
Oh, I totally agree. But then
like
when the cuts...
To have a problem with like, rapid cuttings. But I don't. You know what I don't like about music? When it's fast.
But it's like, not just that. I mean, look, at certain times, cutting could be good. But, okay, Baz Luhrmann, what was the movie, the musical movie that he did with, you know, Ewan McGregor and was Nicole Kidman? Moulin Rouge. There's choreographed sequences and stuff. I was lost. I couldn't see anything. I can't see it. Or Dancer in the Dark. Oh, that bugged me so much that there's these musical sequences in the Dancer in the Dark. This is not Baz Luhrmann, of course, but I couldn't see it. What's happening? I can't even see what's happening.
Well, that's
here.
How I feel when I watch every superhero movie. I'm always like, what?
I don't even bother.
Yeah,
give me just a little bit of time to get what's going on here. And then there could be moments of just hyper editing maybe, but it's just, I need space. I want some space here. Give me space. Yeah. And I don't know. I appreciate when movies just kind of treat pace a little, you know, with a little more delicacy, I guess, or something, you know?
I think it can be done good, and it can be done annoyingly.
I agree. It's all in the execution.
It is, sure.
I promise you, Brent, there have been movies that have had rapid cuts that you have enjoyed.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm certain, but I'll say that Lord of the Rings,
Baz Luhrmann. We don't like Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, Baz Luhrmann, I can't
make
sense
of it. Wait, do you
like
Lord of the Rings?
And by the way, Peter Jackson, I don't really like to say, you know, talk crap or anything, but I'll say that I liked Heavenly Creatures, by the way, you know?
Yeah.
Peter Jackson made that.
Yeah. I do rapid cuts. I've done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
you're,
but
yeah.
I know what you're saying, though, like a whole feature of it. But for some reason, and I don't really like Baz Luhrmann, like I thought, I fell asleep during Romeo and Juliet for some reason, but that's another story. But this movie, for some reason, I was just, every shot is so meticulously perfect. And even though it's like fast cuts, it's kind of like very impressive and it kind of kept me going. But Transformers, I don't know, this comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
It's so, I want to see the robots like fighting, but it's just like.
I agree. Like, yeah. I had the same thing.
It's the kind of thing where it's flying. It's not
only
the cuts,
saw the first
it's the
one.
Flying tight.
Yeah, it's just blur.
That
I don't like.
Disorientation. I want
zoom
to know
out.
What I'm seeing
yeah.
here. Exactly.
Yeah,
zoom out. Exactly.
Just really zoom out.
I just feel like we've evolved, right? Like, think about Westerns from like the 50s, right? A Western from the 50s would be a shot of me peeking up going like, boom. And then this guy peeking up and going, boom. And then over there, you'd cut to a guy going like, ugh. And like that would be, you don't really know like who's shooting at what or what's happening. Uh-huh. And then you watch like a Iñárritu movie, you know, or like the, you know, you watch The Revenant. And it's like, you're taking it all in and you know where everything is. And it makes it so much more dangerous, you know. And it's like, when something comes unexpected, like you're tracking it. It's just like, or like, what was it? Children of Men, you know, like these amazing like, I don't know. I just felt like the choreography of action where you really can track things makes it so much more engaging. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely am like thirsty for more of that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
It also can just wide shots. Is
wide
all
shots.
Give me the wide shot so I can just take it in, you know?
I agree with you. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Wide shots.
Well, okay. For example, there was another, just not for example, we've been doing tons of examples, but there was, I haven't seen Hamilton, you know, that musical Hamilton, and then on Disney Plus, they were showing, they have a filmed version of it
or whatever.
Yeah. And I watched about a half of it or a third of it, and I said, this isn't fair to the musical for me to watch this because there were these big ensemble numbers that were doing all these close-ups on people and not showing what's going on. And I thought, I want to see what this has to offer as far as the choreography and the whole bigger picture. And so I didn't really like the way that was directed.
That should just be a lockdown shot,
yeah.
Like you're watching the play.
Yes, that would have been good for me. I would have liked that.
Like
I would have liked
like a weird
unless,
PBS.
Unless it was a scene where there's someone's having a solo or it's just two people on stage at the same time or something. But for the ensemble stuff, yeah, just lock down a wide shot of the whole thing. Let me see it. And then, yeah, the parts where then you can go close up on the, you know, other stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I hope you sent a letter.
Yeah, no, I did. I made a big stink about this to Disney. I went into Disney headquarters. I went into Disneyland in Anaheim. I made a big stink.
Did you like the music?
I guess I'd rather not.
Okay, fair enough.
I kind of like the song, the King George song. Did you see it? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched it on Disney.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
I stopped watching
it. I actually was like prepared to hate it because I just like, it had been so hyped up for so many years, and I don't care about that kind of thing. And I was like, a rap opera about Hamilton.
It does seem like edutainment, you know?
Yeah, and I was fully juiced to be like, fuck this. And then it charmed me.
It did.
Oh, all right.
Well, look, hey, I love the High School Musical trilogy, so whatever.
Really?
You know, yeah, and genuinely so. So
no
anyway,
way.
Yeah,
it's
great.
God, you're so mysterious.
It's great. It's just great filmmaking and writing and everything. Music, yeah. Choreography, all of it. It has it all.
Now, did you see The Book of Mormon?
I did. I saw it live.
Did you like that?
I thought it was produced really well.
What is it? What is behind that statement? So what didn't you like about it? It was produced really well. It's so good.
Why don't you go Bulgarian with your attitude? You know? Just be Bulgarian about it.
I saw it opening
the production
night.
Did you like
Coincidentally.
What?
The Book of Mormon?
That was Tim Heidecker's date. At the
opening
the Book of Mormon opening.
Oh, really?
What'd you think of it?
And it's funny because we were talking about this like yesterday for some reason, or a couple days ago, and I'm like, I think I walked down the red carpet with Tim. And then I tried to look it up. And in my memory, they were saying like, Mr. Heidecker, and they were telling me, they're like, get out of the way, you know, for the photo. They're like, get this guy out of here. And I hid behind Tim. So there's a photo of, like, you can see my arm behind Tim at the premiere. But no, it's I don't really like musicals, I guess.
I love musicals.
I don't like, I have never seen one that I was like, I haven't seen a lot.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, the songs are funny. The performances were great.
But
the South Park guys, I like everything they do. Except the musical is not my thing, I guess. You know?
Okay, so you like the guys, you like the music in the musical.
I love South Park. I like other movies.
Team America. All their stuff, but
no, I love all their movies.
What's missing here?
I'm just saying I don't like the medium of.
Do you not like Team America?
Team America is a musical.
I love
South Park the movie.
That's a movie. I'm sitting in a theater watching.
So do you like plays?
No.
That's what it is. You don't like theater.
I don't like any of that shit.
You don't like plays. No, you don't like the medium.
You don't like live theater.
I don't like the medium.
Stage.
I don't
stand-up like comedy is live theater, kind of. You know?
I don't like that. I barely like that.
You guys are wild, man. You don't like editing.
What play am
like
I?
No,
I, by the way,
what
I
play
love
am I going to go to?
Actually, I love
what
editing.
Play? I don't know. Yeah. What
What's
plays
a good
could
play?
There possibly be?
I love editing, and when there are statements being made about editing in movies, when there's interesting edits, I love that. But I like also to be able to see what understand what I'm watching. You know, not just. You know, it'd be a blur.
Sure. That. Look, like everybody agrees version. That if the editing makes it impossible to understand what you're watching, then that's bad.
Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
All right. Lord of the Rings. All right. On that note, I think we should probably wrap up the main.
Yeah, we're an hour.
The main
okay.
hour.
That was an hour?
Okay. That was an hour. Right. We're going to stick around.
Yeah,
if you
want
to stick around.
If you want to.
Sure.
No,
I'd be happy to.
If you want to. I mean,
yeah.
We would love to. But I mean, cool. Yeah, if you...
We're going on Zipped with Zach Cregger in a second. If you want to go on Zipped... sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/poundcast. That's what keeps this show chugging along. Right, Brent?
Oh, chug.
And watch Barbarian streaming now.
On HBO Max.
On HBO Max.
Why not?
Right?
Or
sure.
Anywhere else?
Not even on Hulu, God bless. No, Hulu got good stuff. Hulu.
Yeah, Huluween.
Anyway, let's go unzipped for everyone else. Anything else we got to mention? Yeah, we'd like to give a thank you to our Poundcast team.
Yes.
Jack Birch, L. Bircho, and Jackie Montana.
And Aaron Brunkart.
And Aaron Brunkart behind the boards. And let's go unzipped. And if you're not unzipping with us, we'll see you next week.
Big Bird!
All right, heroes, yeah.
They're friends.
They're friends.
Doug and Brent.
What time do you go to sleep?